I'm joined by Noman Benotman from the Quilliam Foundation, who's just done a report on the Islamist group Jabhat al-Nusra. Noman, can you just first of all give us an idea of how close Jabhat al-Nusra's ties to al-Qaeda are?
Yeah, there's two different issues here. If we talk about ideologically, for me, it seems there's no difference whatsoever. We can say they are the same group when it comes to the ideology, you know, the set of beliefs, values, and concepts. But from the organization perspective, that means the hierarchy and the chain of command, of course, there is a lot of, like, dark spots, and it's not very easy for anyone at this moment, you know, to get to deep, you know, to that issue. But there is a logistic link. There is a lot of people, you know, they were in Iraq, or people they fought in Iraq for the last maybe 7 or 8 years. They are now constituting the hardcore of Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, especially the experts in explosives, you know, like in Aleppo and other places. There's a lot of them. They were in Iraq, you know, they fought there with al-Qaeda. And the communications, it's still there until now between the two different groups, if we say so far. So I think this is the conclusion about if there are two groups, you know. But the possibility, I think, in the future, it's very high, you know, for al-Nusra, you know, to, I don't know, this is what we conclude they aim for an Islamist state, you know, which is replicating the model in Iraq itself there. So if they carry on, you know, in this way, that means they might create their own organization, despite they're going to call it the Islamic State in Syria, basically. And it's not necessarily they're going to stay in organizational form. They strongly believe and very confident, like, they're going to run the whole state, you know. They're going to control the whole state, and they're going to establish an Islamist state in Syria.
To what extent are they leading the fight against the Assad regime at the moment?
In terms of numbers, you know, they are a small group in comparison to others. You know, there's a lot of other brigades and units, and even we can't compare them to Al-Jashar or the Fisinia army, because they are the largest group, you know, tens of thousands. But they are very effective if you talk about their performance and how effective they are because of their tactics, guerrilla warfare tactics. I think they are none to second, without a shadow of a doubt.
And are they more active in some areas over others? I gather that's particularly prevalent in Aleppo.
Yeah, in Aleppo, because it's a very famous battle now, start to be, and it's very important, you know, because of the location itself. But in Idlib as well, they have a significant presence now, and still there's ongoing battle now, I think, for 4 or 5 days in Tifnas Airport there, al-Nusra, one of the leading group with other two groups, you know, now around the airport, and I think any moment we expect the whole airport to enter and to conquer the whole airport there, you know, and they have a significant presence in Damascus as well, either inside the city and surrounding the city in Reef Damascus, you know, which is like the countryside. They basically have an early presence, you know, more than a year there, and in their Zur as well. They have a very, very significant presence there with a lot of, like, Iraqis there, jihadists fighting there with them, including at the level of commanders.
And initially, when the reports started to emerge of Jabhat al-Nusra, activists referred to them as a sort of some sort of creation of the government. Later, reports said that, you know, we shouldn't exaggerate the importance of noisy but relatively minor figures such as Jabhat al-Nusra. And now this report is saying that they've overestimated their popular support in Syria. Isn't there a danger that you know, outsiders are underestimating the importance of such groups?
Oh yeah, of course. No, look, I think if you talk from a Western perspective, you know, I think there's a good understanding, you know, of how important they are, not just by their number, you know, or their size, but what they can do. It's all about influence, you know, and how they can influence, let's say, a regional security agenda or even international. That's the main concern, I think, from a Western perspective or international community perspective as well. This issue, it's very clear, you know, as I mentioned, from an international perspective. But I think the issue of the creation of the Mukhabarat, you know, which is like the Syrian intelligence service, I think it's baseless, you know. We know it. We spoke with their, like, rivals or maybe enemies, you know. People, they're exaggerating certain issues or they're interpreting another issue, like the release of about 200, you know, jihadists, you know, from Saydana prison, you know, late 2011, which is a deliberate act from the regime, you know, to mix everything. And I think the Mukhabarat, the Syrian intelligence service at the time, they were aiming for, like, maybe these guys, because 200, it's a real number, you know. And all of them, they've been arrested because of Iraq. They were accused of, like, facilitating some activities or terrorist activities in Iraq. They've been released just in one day, you know. People did think that was, you know, that exactly was the first act of the regime to create Jabhat al-Nusra, you know. And then the secretive, you know, way, or the more secret, it's a very, still very secretive organization. They are the only group they operate, most of them, not all, but most of them, they're still wearing masks, you know, in Syria, including the leaders. So it's kind of a dark spot.
Your report says that there's some evidence that they've infiltrated the government. Can you explain what that is?
It's basically, you know, there's a lot of operations, a lot of their operations, which sometimes they call it like amaliya amniya, a security operation, especially the big ones, you know, inside Damascus, you know, all of them based on information from the target itself, like within the government structure. And usually it took them 2 months and sometimes 3 months to prepare and to execute the operation. But all of them based on information from within the government, even from the military, you know. And sometimes people in certain, like, military units, they give them even, plans how to attack and when. And I'm not aware of any other group, you know, they reach that level.
Where are they getting their funding from?
Look, when it comes to fund, they were struggling a lot. And that's why I think it's, to a certain extent, control their level or their rate of growth. And they're still, as we mentioned, about, I think, like, about, we talk about 5,000 members. So it's, in terms of numbers, as I mentioned, they have about 5,000. So it doesn't need, like, you know, like a huge amount of fund when you have only that number. And the conflict, it's a nationwide conflict. It's not their only conflict. It's not only al-Nusra fighting the regime. So the support coming to the Syrians, all of them, opposition in local communities, certain cities, refugee camps as well, it's helping and revealing the burden of al-Nusra as one of this opposition. And by the way, it's a deliberate strategy executed by them from the beginning, you know. That's why they don't care a lot to appear in the media. They don't want to distinguish themselves from the opposition. Then they will be easy target, you know, either from propaganda warfare or physically from, like, hostile security activities against them. But recently, they are in a comfortable situation. For the last, I think, 3 months, it seems they are in more comfortable situation in terms of fund. I think, to a certain extent, because of their operations inside Syria, rather fund comes from abroad.
Where? The Gulf countries?
Yes, but not an official one. We know they have successfully established channels in certain, like, countries with the jihadists. They're helping them, you know, to raise fund and then to deliver it to Syria to reach them. But in terms of military equipment, all of their equipment, it's from the Syrian army, official army, you know.
You say that they've overestimated their popular support, but when the U.S. Proscribed the organization, there were demonstrations in favor of Jabhat al-Nusra. Again, what's the evidence that they've overestimated their support?
Look, this is very important, but I think here we need to be very careful about. I know it's a very complex issue, but most of the demonstrations, because the Syrians, a lot of them until now, they are frustrated For one thing, they strongly believe the international community, including the U.S., abandoned them. And I don't know, it's either a fact or a myth, but the most important thing is what they believe in, what's their, you know, perception about the international community response to their crisis. So they think it's a conspiracy against them to serve the Israeli security. That's what the people, you know, even non-Islamists, like ordinary people, they believe. But, so, the demonstrations, I think, it's more to express the anger against the international community rather to support al-Nusra from an ideological perspective.
Isn't that just wishful thinking?
Yes. I think it's from al-Nusra to think like the whole society, and we have a lot of facts about that. You know, it's based on research. You know.
No, but isn't it wishful thinking on your part that they don't have much sympathy?
No, it's they have of course. You mean al-Nusra, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, they have their own supporters, but the problem is, it's been attached, it's part of their strategy. It's part of their grand strategy. That's what happened in Iraq to Al-Qaeda, and they've been defeated because of that false perception, you know. They think, because of Islam, so people, you know, they're going to, like, by matter of fact, if they manage militarily to succeed to defeat the regime by their actions, you know, on the ground, that means they will get support from the vast Sunni community in Syria, which is not, because the Sunni community in Syria, which is the vast majority, they don't do politics based on religion. And even if they do it based on religion, not to that extent, because we have different sects as well. And that's what I think completely al-Nusra missing.
Well, so what role do you think they'll play in post-Assad Syria?
First of all, of course, it depends about how we get there first, you know. What's the scenario, you know, will emerge to get rid of al-Assad or post al-Assad. If it's, which is unlikely from my perspective, is going to be like a military defeat from al-Nusra themselves, like a comprehensive military defeat, you know, against the regime, and then to conquer Damascus and the whole country. I don't think al-Nusra themselves as a group, you know, they are capable of doing that, but they prepared themselves from that. And I don't know where they get this, like, idea from, but some of them, they are very confident when they're going to reach that moment, all the jihadist groups, which is, they're not members of al-Nusra now, and here we talk about a big, big number, you know, like we talk about a lot of thousands, I'm not going to say 10,000, but a real significant critical mass, they said they're going to join them, and they will create the scenario of, we are the jihadists and the Muslims versus the rest.
But if they do play a part in the battle, or continue to play a part in the battle to defeat Assad, what role will they have in a post Assad government?
No, they criticized all the other, you know, like let's say models now, either Syria, either Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya. Of course, forget about the Yemen. They basically criticize them, including in Libya. You know, they think what's going on now, it's wrong from an Islamic perspective, and they felt kind of disappointed how the jihadists, they accept to play a role with the others. You know, they said it's the main point of departure is to create the, you know, Islamist state, you know, and then you talk to the others. But, and they are, look, 100% against democracy. There is no room whatsoever, you know, in their thoughts for democracy at all. Very, very strong negative point of view, and basically they put it like as an opposite to Islam.
So finally, you know, how worried should we be about Jabhat al-Nusra?
Of course, I think the only chance we have, it's now, while the war's still ongoing. That's from our perspective. We think now the chance, but if we reach the point...
Now's the chance to do what?
To try to sort them out. I think we should start with negotiations. Not necessarily, you know, countries or like international community or entities, they don't believe in them or they don't believe to negotiate with such groups, but always there is a room for other parties, you know, even Muslims, to try, you know, to come to terms. I know Nusra themselves, they are against that, by the way, you know, especially when it comes to anything from abroad, against that, and they have a very negative, you know, hostile point of view towards certain regional Muslim countries, you know. But I think it's still doable from other parties, you know, from especially mediators, supported Syria based on Gulf states, they can. They can, I think, at least, you know, to explore, to give it, to give it a chance. And then if we reach the point of no return and said, no, there is no solution with these guys, you know, at all, that means that's it. That means we're heading to a real conflict, a disaster, you know. Because, you know, the way how they act now and the way how they see the future of the of Syria, they are in 100%, I think, conflict of the regional countries, the international community, and including the Syrian, the Syrians themselves, the pro-democratic Syrians. They are really in a conflict with them.
So we should negotiate with them?
Yes, and now, before we reach the point, I think post al-Assad, it's a really, really disaster. I think so. And we have a lot of experience from somewhere else. Now the opportunity, you know, at least, you know, to exhaust non-military tools and means.
What's the danger if negotiations don't take place?
Oh, that means I think we're going to have this, I think, the Iraqi scenario. And we believe, based on our research, they are capable of replicating, we call it the Iraqi code, the way how they're going to fight, not the soft fight now, you know.
Okay, Bennett, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.